Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome. I hope you, your family and your friends are keeping healthy. To our new listeners, welcome on in. To those of you who tune in regularly, thank you, thank you, thank you. Each and every one of you are in a very special place in my heart, and I'm so grateful to be sitting alongside each and every one of you today. Okay, team, I woke up early. I'm going to put it out there. Today, you and I are in for an absolute treat. A truly enlightening conversation with a man who is really knocking it out of the park and doing some interesting things around the world. I've got to know my guest over the last wee while, and I can honestly say his drive, his commitment, his professionalism for what he does is second to none. And I'm so glad to be able to get him onto my podcast today so he can share his story with us all today. Before I introduce you all to him, I wanted to ask a couple of very quick questions. What do you know about Canada? What do you see as success? Is it something that sits well with you? Is it something you are constantly striving for, or something you don't like to discuss? You put it to one side. How can great systems help you? And my last question, have you ever broken your back? I think I've got your attention. Welcome in. Well, we're all going to explore all the above with my amazing guest today, along with his soon-to-be-released book, Success is a System. I'd like to share a little bit of a story before we introduce him into the show. I had the privilege and pleasure of playing rugby up in Canada many years ago. I think it was in the early 90s. And it's a place that I found to be amazing. A real fond place in my heart. A place where every house I enter was full of love, full of conversation, full of healthy respect and debate for the global game I love. And a place that introduced me to peanut butter and Toyota pickup trucks. So here are a couple of interesting facts as I was preparing for today's podcast. And not wanting to let my friend down, I wanted to do some really deep and meaningful research. Canada is the second largest country in the world right after Russia. It is the world's most educated country with over half its residents having college degrees. And it's where today's guest proudly calls home. So all, I ask you to do, my friends today, as we get into it and go deep on a number of things, is sit back, relax, pull up a comfy chair, grab yourself a cocoa, and let's go and explore together. My name is Nick Roud, and you're listening to the Nick Roud Podcast. My guest joins us live from Calgary, Alberta, and he's written a few specific books already, so he's not new to writing books. Breakthroughs in Success. How a Broken Back Heal a Broken Mind, How to Sell in Any Economy. And his latest book, Success is a System, will be available in a few weeks' time. And I'll make sure once it goes live on Amazon, you'll have all the access to be able to purchase it. It is with pleasure that I'm able to introduce you to a man that at one stage was lying in a hospital bed, not knowing if he was going to make it. It's a huge honour to personally welcome on the one and only Mr. Stan Peake, husband, dad and owner of Insight Performance Coaching over in Canada. Welcome, my friend. Welcome, Stan, onto the Nick Roud Podcast. How are you today?
Oh, my gosh. I am filled with gratitude and I am humbled by your extremely kind and generous introduction. Thank you, my friend. Thank you for having me on. And listeners, thank you for sharing your time with us today. We hope it'll be jam-packed with as much value as we can cram into the time we have together.
I was watching some of your clips on YouTube and I'm through your website, and our listeners can jump online and have a look for themselves. But just your passion and voice, it gets a lot of people going. And I know, having you on as a guest, and we are going to talk about your book, but just your raw energy of what you do and your story is going to be really interesting to many. But whereabouts Canada, whereabouts is home, and just give us a sense geographically where you kind of sit as a family and as a business.
Yeah, we do business all over the country and actually other parts of the world, but headquartered in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. So for your wonderful Kiwi audience and audience around the world, right near the Rocky Mountains, near Banff, a lot of you must have heard of Banff National Park. We get about 4 million visitors there a year, even though Calgary only has a population of about 1.4 million. So that's probably the best, marker that your listeners may have heard of if they haven't been to Canada?
I remember when I was playing rugby up there, we did a triangular tour and we went through Regina, Saskatchewan province, and just the whole country, the vastness. That it reminds me a great deal of New Zealand, and for our listeners, and many of our listeners here in New Zealand have a close affinity to places like Canada. It's especially the South Island here in New Zealand. It's a very similar landscape, a similar feel, and I think the sense of humour from people that I've got to meet and know, like yourself in Canada, is very aligned with Kiwis. So I know there's so much more that people can do in life and do in business, but sometimes it's nice just to pause and just remember how lucky we are to live in beautiful countries. And there's a great deal of war and pressure and, you know, tremendous disruption around the world. But I think, you know, just to reflect for a moment and remember where we both live, Canada and New Zealand, we're in beautiful parts of the world. So long may that last.
Amen to that. Sorry, my grandfather fought in the Second World War, and you know, that's one of the reasons that I think you and I both are so driven to help give back. It's not lost on either of us that with privilege comes responsibility. I was lucky to be born where I was when I was, and I think that, again, any level of success, part of the reason for this book as well is to give back and help others. So I couldn't agree with you more.
I think we all spend time thinking about. I was saying recently to a friend and speaking to somebody who I've not seen for many, many years, and he's not going through a good space at the moment. But you do start to think about your own world and your own life when things come on and change in our world. You know, I don't have one set of grandparents. They've unfortunately passed away, and you know, they were Hungarian Jews, and lots of things that happened in the war that we're not going to talk about today. But we don't know how lucky we are that we don't get sent off to war, or we don't get put on the front line. But we're not going to go down that point. We're going to talk about a wonderful book and something you've been working on for a long time. But before we do that, I just thought maybe it's a good time for you just to introduce yourself to us, to the listeners, and give us a bit of a sense of you, Stan, and who you are, and a little bit more about you if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to. I'm someone who is extremely passionate about leadership and about mentorship, and I've always been passionately curious about business. So background, I played rugby as well. I played football. And for your listeners, when Canadians and Americans say football, you know, we mean that ovular object we're tossing and not the international sport, of course. So I played those two sports, and my first career was in fitness. Plan A football didn't work out through injury, but I had an 18-year career in fitness and health, and I owned two businesses over that time. I was very fortunate in the second business. My business partner and I got bought out, went through a merge with a phenomenal medical screening company with some wonderful people. But even with great people, it was so different. And so going through an amazing learning experience, on the other side of it, I started to lose passion for what I did. And I share that because you mentioned the passion in my voice. I've always been kind of a fired up guy, on the football fields, in fitness, in coaching. But there was a good 2-year stretch where I lost that, and I was questioning purpose, and just every day was a little bit harder to get up, lacking a clear and compelling vision and what I was doing and why. So that's actually what led me into executive coaching, is that I realized when I was a fitness professional, I was helping people overcome limitations. I was actually helping them discover their potential. And I absolutely loved it. I was a bit of a brutal trainer, but I absolutely loved it. And brutal, I mean, in a, you know, bring you to the brink of destruction and then help you through it. And, you know, the transformation that happened through that, both physically as well as emotionally and spiritually, was pretty profound. So in my role post the merge and through the merge, it was really just as an executive. At one point, I had grown to 5 teams, 50 direct reports, and I totally imploded. There's a lot of things I could have done differently, but I wasn't doing what I was put on this earth to do. So through the two-year process of discovery, doing more personal development than I had in the previous decade, it came back to me through a few tools that coaching and inspiring people were my top two traits. So back to school, time to get certified as an executive coach. Actually, during one of my ladder certifications, that's, of course, how you and I met. And really, it's gotten me back to my roots of helping people uncover and step towards their potential. That's what I'm here to do. I do that as a coach. I do that as an author. I do that when, you know, I'm delivering training programs. And I do that even when I'm giving back to people who may be between jobs and have no way of affording my services. But we've all needed help once, and that's a part of it as well. So that's the quick, you know, 50,000 square foot level of my background, both career-wise and professionally. I'm an executive coach, a certified facilitator, keynote speaker, and author. That's the
shorter version. Brilliant. I think we need to put the big elephant in the room out there. And I left a little kind of teaser earlier with our listeners, hopefully grabbed their attention, the broken back. And whilst it's not about comparing apples for apples, having five knee reconstructions myself after playing rugby and having the time off my feet, having the time away from exercise and movement and fresh air and freedom and the constraints that a leg brace does for you for months on end. I can only imagine. Well, actually, no, I laid in a bed. This is a true story as well. I laid in a bed in the hospital. I woke up. A friend of mine, funny enough, he actually lives in New Zealand. And I know he's listening to it and he'll laugh at this because he'll remember it. I remember waking up after my operation and I had a morphine drip into my arm. And I remember opening up my eyes and there's my friend John looking over me. And he just twisted the morphine up a few notches and he said, "You'll be fine, son." And my leg was kind of moving on a very short machine because it had to move so many centimeters a day or something to get things right. But the reason I shared that with you, and I want to understand a bit more about the seriousness of the broken back, the guy lying next to me had been hit off a bike and he had to lie, I think, for 6 months flat on a bed. And he had, I remember, five or six pins going through his skull to kind of push his vertebrates and everything back so that everything was kept in line. But when I was doing my research on you and getting ready for our podcast today about your book, there was a big thing about a broken back. So I just wanted to jump in and say, I'm glad you're alive, man. I'm glad we're here talking about when, what happened. Talk us through the broken back situation.
Well, it's funny, our timing. It was actually 3 years ago, exactly today. It was August 26th, 2016.
Oh, wow.
So, it actually, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, in the moment you'll be able to turn, or you hope you'll be able to turn into a positive, but you have no idea how the hell that's going to happen in the moment. So what had happened was I actually started my coaching business in 2015 and I was still working in my other business at the time. Everybody knew, I was very transparent about it. But what happened was I think it was May of 2016. It was time to focus on my coaching practice full time. At the end of May, that was it. You know, had a send off and focus on this, you know, ride off in the horizon, build this practice. And there was a day where I had carved out a full day for administrative duties, my finances, get all the taxes, all those things in order. But that's, you know, not my interest or my skill set. So I wanted to go on a good mountain bike first to just, you know, get the blood flow and do something for my body, get in the right mindset. And it's funny because my whole goal of getting in the right mindset went completely haywire when a bunch of the staff at this ski hill, which, of course, they're mountain bike parks in the summer, were late for work. And I was getting impatient. I was waiting for them and they weren't there. So I decided I would ride on their skills park while I was waiting for the chairlift to open. So one of the things I try to tell anyone, you know, that I'm in front of is, and you mentioned it earlier, mindset is everything. So I kind of began my day pissed off, mad at somebody else, and just not focused. And if anyone of your listeners does mountain bike, it's a great analogy for life. I try to tell people, when you're mountain biking, focus on where you want to go, not where you don't. If you don't want to hit that boulder, don't look at it.
Because you're going to hit it.
You really got to... Well, I didn't hit a boulder. What happened was there was a bridge that went up and down like this. And I hit it wrong, wobbly tires. And instead of focusing my line straight ahead, I kind of noticed the danger off the side of the bridge. And inevitably, that's where my tire went. My right tire went off at the highest point of the bridge. My bike flipped and I landed upside down head first. And I cracked my helmet. I look at it now. I kept it for that reason. My helmet is broken in 7 places. I fractured 2 vertebrae, T4 and T5, in my back. They originally thought it was my neck. And so because they thought it was my neck, I had to wear a CTO, a cervical thoracic orthotic. Kind of keeps you like this.
Pulls you straight enough.
So I couldn't drive for 3 months because I couldn't turn my head to shoulder check. And, you know, you've owned a few businesses, especially in a very personal service relationship-based business. Really tough when you can't drive to network or build your business. And I remember in the first day in the hospital, the doctor said, you won't be working for a while, which my bank account said otherwise. So that first day I had my wife bring my laptop to the hospital, bless her. This business would not be where it is today without her every step of the way. I started dictating emails and you know, that's what she did. I mean, we all need a great team, and the most important team any of us play on lives at the same address. You know that. You're a family man.
Very true.
So through her support, I was able to get through that really challenging time. I have a 10-year-old son. He was 7 at the time. He came there and, you know, wanted to make sure I was okay. He also, their kids are great at humbling us. Something fell off of my tray and everyone was, what's that? And my son Chase said, oh, Dad broke another bone.
Bless him.
Because those vertebrae were bones 7 and 8 I've broken in my life. You know, sports your whole life, that kind of thing.
So take me back. Before you talk about your mentor or anything like that, but just take me back. So you've gone off for a bike ride. Let me just get this factually correct, because I like the detail sometimes, especially in a story. And the way I can picture this now is you've got pissed off with your mates because no one's turned up at said time. And we've all been there. We've gone on our high horse and gone, right, I'll see you somewhere else. And always a big lesson in life is you never go off on your own unless you tell people where you're going. So, fact. So you head off on your bike ride. You hit a dodgy part of a bridge. You do the unthinkable. You look where you're going and you end up faced upwards looking at the sky. Then what happens? So you're on your own?
No, luckily I was at, Calgary, we hosted the 1988 Olympics, Winter Olympics. And so we've got amazing facilities. And I actually live right near the most of the Nordic facilities. And in the summer, they built a great mountain bike park. So there was staff that were there. In fact, you want to talk humbling. I overheard, I was out for a couple of seconds. I felt like I was paralyzed for a few moments. I don't know how long that passed. That was pretty scary. But I overheard someone say, oh, that looked bad. I'm going to go check on that guy. And he asked if I was okay. And I said, I'm not sure. So I distinctly remember him writing down to the, you know, medics.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, I've got a middle-aged guy up here. He seems to be hurt. Thinking, you're lucky I can't get up, kid.
But one day
that was humbling. Yeah, that was humbling, and they didn't know at the time that I had a back break. And I mean, with a fitness background, I'm certified and trained in first aid, but I was in shock. So the thing is that they said, you know, well, if you're okay, just get up and sit over there. And I did. And you're anything. The first rule with head injuries and back injuries, even suspected, don't move them.
Yep.
You should you know, brace them and those kinds of things. I know that, but you're not thinking straight when that happens. No. Like I said, I came down head first, right? There was a bit of a mismanagement, let's say, on my part and maybe the staff's part on how that first happened. And then got to the hospital, and Calgary, we're very blessed, in Canada in general, as you are in New Zealand, to have first-rate medical care, so taken care of extremely well. I was in a neck brace on a bed being treated within 5 minutes of arriving at the hospital. They take those very seriously.
So you had great people around you to support you, not only your wife, the kids, or your son, but your family and things like that. And rehab, talk me through that before we move on.
I talk about the rehab, I'm going to go back to that mentor story, because we will talk, peppered in some point today, about how important it is to have mentors, more than one. But my chief mentor, who's also one of my best friends, just got on a plane and came out. And I think he was there by the second day. So we were talking offline about injuries and morphine. And the morphine, that I was mentally meh the first day. Second day, I had some clarity. And I mentioned to my mentor then two things. First of all, I wasn't going to waste a perfectly good broken back because I only planned on having one. And second of all, I was going to find a way to turn this into an unfair advantage. I didn't know how. I'll elaborate as we talk about rehab. I was in the hospital for, if I can remember, I think it was about six or so days, something like that. And then I had to wear that brace 24/7. I had to shower with it on. I had to shave with it on. It was actually, when I say inconvenient, that's a gross understatement. It was awful. A bed with a towel underneath me, take off the straps, change them, give them to her. She would wring them out, bring me the dry ones, get all set up again, and then get up out of the bed. I could not be on my 2 feet without that brace for 73 days. My doctor said longer than that, but after 73 days, I had a massive breakdown and I just couldn't wear it anymore. I took it off. And about 5 days later was my follow-up where they said I could take it off. But it was, I mean, I played football, you know, right now I'm 6 feet, 220 pounds. I'm usually pretty fit. During my rehab of going to physiotherapy, walking every day, I got a great window into empathy because I got so many double takes. So many little kids would point me out to their parents. I've never been a very judgmental person. I've always tried to, you know, treat people with respect and never judge them for being different. But you really got a window into how some people must feel for whatever reason. So that was a positive looking back because, wow, just naive, you know, being a fit person, naive to what so many people go through.
Have you drawn a great deal of that on the book? Has that come through? When I read it, now you told me that story and I've read the book and we'll talk about that in a minute, but I get a lot of that from the book. Now you've shared that story with me. Is that call right or not?
Yeah, no, it is. And I think, so the second book was all about that. And that ended up being my unfair advantage because you and I both know that, you know, coaches, there's so many of us now. The coaching industry is exploding, which is a good thing, except for the fact that our industry is largely unregulated. So there's people like us that pursued our master certified executive coaching designation. I'm also a certified facilitator, certified in cultural transformation tools, you name it. However, what's unfortunate about the coaching industry blowing up is that there's a lot of buyer beware. There's a lot of people who aren't certified, have never owned their own business, may not have even held an executive position, and they're giving advice and charging money for it. To me, that should be illegal. That's an aside. But through that book, you know, what I really realized in the second book was my unfair advantage was differentiation among that plethora of so many people that call themselves a coach in two ways. Number one, my cash flow through that time made me desperate. And I'm not that entrepreneur who just got it right the first time. My first business, I closed to take a better career opportunity. My second business got bought out, fantastic. Third business was growing, but slow. And then the back break happened, and it made me desperate. Mm. And that desperation led to a level of commitment and creativity that I wouldn't otherwise have experienced. And it's through those reasons why the coaching process, my sales process, and my effort levels have all reached, I think, levels that I wouldn't have reached had I not broken my back.
You touch a very good point there, Stan, and I don't know whether you see as much of the global news that we get thrown down our throats here in New Zealand, but I remember there was an earthquake in a part of the world, and I'll never forget it. And I know it's probably going a little bit off topic, but if you can picture a building just collapsed, and then you see a man probably no bigger than me, and I'm 5'6". So I'm quite short, albeit I'm sure I'm 6'6" in the real life. So imagine seeing a 5'5" guy walking up to a humongous boulder that when he puts his arms out as wide as they can go, he's barely touching the sides of that. Anyway, the next minute you see this man lifting this boulder off a child. And the capture of the news reel is seeing this man physically lift this boulder off somebody to make this person, make this human, this poor child survive, and she did. But you touch a real point that when you're in adversity and you've had an injury and everything's against you, it's amazing how deep a human can go when they need to, when the backs are against the wall. And I think you and I have spoken to it a great deal, but you don't know that you're doing things until you really faced adversity and you really faced some real tough challenges. It doesn't come easy, does it? Running a business, having whatever walk of life we do, nothing is easy, nothing's given to you. But just to see that sense of determination from him and lifting that thing just resonated with me as you shared that story about a horrendous injury from your back accident. And so health-wise now, are you healthy? Are you kicking the ball around with your 10-year-old? Or what are you doing?
Absolutely. You know what? I've been mountain biking. In fact, you know, speaking of my son, he plays hockey, and it was his first year of hockey when he was about, Canada, I mean, it's such a stereotype, but my son started playing hockey when he was 5.
Are you talking ice hockey now? Or
ice hockey.
Yeah, because I remember seeing an ice hockey game in Canada. It's amazing, but carry on.
Oh, and what a skill. And so, you know, contrary to popular belief, we are not born with skates on our feet in Canada. We have to learn just like everybody else. And my son, when he was in his first year of hockey, was really struggling. And so I took him to practice between his hockey practices, just working on his skating. And there's one day where he kind of skated and fell and landed on his back and the back of his head. He was wearing a helmet, but he was crying. Mm. And he wanted to go home and he wanted to quit. And I said, no problem, buddy. We can go home once you've done 3 more laps of the rink. I don't care. You can cry for 20 minutes. I don't care if it's an hour. No problem. Daddy's got time. But you're not leaving until we do another 3 laps. And sure enough, when you just, you know, you're there for empathetic with them, supportive. But yeah, once he picked himself up, he did his 3 laps. And then I'm like, okay, we can go anytime. He goes, no, I don't want to leave yet.
I want more,
and,
Dad. I want some
now
more time.
Now he's going into his 7th year of hockey.
Yeah.
So because, you know, I didn't let that fear manifest into something bigger. So I bring that up because August 26, 2016 is when I broke my back. By the time I had healed to the point where I could mountain bike, it's winter in Canada, which lasts a long time. But that next spring of 2017, I was back on my mountain bike as soon as I possibly could be. And because of that very reason, I can't give my son one form of advice and then say, do what I say, not what I do. So that was important to walk the talk. And since then, I mean, heck, I've done races. I've done, like, you know, those what do you call them? Like the Tough Mudder obstacle course type races. I've done 10Ks. I've done mountain biking.
Brilliant.
So the back isn't 100%, but it's as good as it's going to be. And, you know, when you have adversity, as you mentioned, you deal with it. You can't control outcomes. You can't control circumstances. Mm. But life is all about how we react and the choices we make after the adversity or opportunities happen for us.
And I think that's, you know, when I read your book, and thank you for sending me a, for full disclosure, thank you for sending me a copy a few months ago to just have a look through, and I thought it was a wonderful read, and I want to dig a little bit deeper into that as we go through our conversation today, just to get a little bit more into those areas that you've kind of talked about. But your business, Insight Performance Coaching, is that a mantra to you, if that's the right word? You know, do as I'm gonna do what I say. I'm not going to tell you to do something and then do completely the opposite. Is that something you hold firm in your business? Is that important to you and important to you and your clients?
It absolutely is, and it's about being consistent. It's not about being perfect. You know, I'm a big believer in a morning routine, and there's still times that I sleep in. When I say sleep in, I mean I don't get up at 5:15. There's days it goes a bit later than that, but it is about consistency and not about perfection. One of the skills that I transferred over from my fitness career into my coaching career is really supporting people and holding them accountable through the process of making changes. It's always a balance. If you just hold people accountable, they may perceive you as an a-hole. And if you're just supportive and that's it, with no challenge, you might be a bit of a crutch. To truly facilitate behavior change, I think you need both. And so I am a big believer that if I'm going to challenge other people, I have to challenge myself. I like to challenge my thinking, my beliefs, my routines, my limitations. So I actually challenge myself more than I challenge others, because I believe that I hold myself to a standard that it would be unfair to hold others to.
You and I work with leaders, and whether we're in Canada or New Zealand or America or Europe or the States, there's one thing I think resonates with really, truly great leaders, and it's that consistency, that consistent message, consistency around tone and delivery, etc., and behaviours around routines. And the more I've had the pleasure, like you, of meeting many people and getting to know them, there is routine in that mindset. There is the routine in getting up, getting out of bed, doing some exercise, moving, eating healthy, you know, taking your time. It's not just a case of, as many people do, I'm sure, listening in, you know, jump up, grab the phone, check what's going on in the world. You know, a lot of people choose to leave the technology away for a couple of hours in the morning or even half the morning. And I think the more people I've got to meet, I don't know about yourself, but the more people I meet, you know, the technology has been an enabler, but now they're starting to use it as a, no, I'll control the technology as and when I need to control that technology, and that routine and being really consistent around that. There's one thing I've certainly noticed with people, especially at the very, very senior end. Yes, there's a hell of an amount of demands on him or her. Yes, there's a hell of a lot of pressure for them to perform and deliver, but there's one thing they do is they keep that healthy routine going. And I want to talk about that healthy routine that you spoke about, but in particular around writing books. And it's clear after reading your book, Success is a System, that you've got a real knack and a real art of walking me, the reader, through the book from start to finish. I want to ask really a silly question, but hopefully not a unthought question, but why do you write? Why do you grab a pen, a computer, and put your thoughts down on paper? Just walk me through that.
No, it's a great question. Thank you for asking. It's to affect more people. You know, when I go back to my fitness career, what I realized that even if I was a really good fitness trainer and I had a packed schedule, that's 35 to 40 client appointments a week. And that's great. Mm. Beyond an income, the problem with that is that that's a finite amount of impact you can have. If you're good at what you do, that's 40 client sessions a week. And if you're good, those 40 clients aren't turning over week after week. They're sticking with you. Mm-hmm. So with the turnover that might occur, if I stayed in fitness my whole, you know, say 30, 40 years, I probably would have been able to help 200 people. And for whatever reason, I have always felt like I was called to help more. I've been very fortunate. I've had some amazing mentors in my life, from my parents to the grandfather I mentioned, football coaches, the boss I had in Vancouver, Matt Young, who we'll talk about, so many good friends. You know, they don't have to be professionals that are setting records and writing books. My closest circle of friends are mentors of mine because I admire their consistency of behavior, the way they show up in their family lives. So as I mentioned before, when you have any sort of fortune, success, I think it's the onus is to pay it back. And so getting into executive coaching one-on-one is a huge passion of mine, being able to help good people, help more people. But it's, again, limiting in terms of the number of people I can help. Even if I do my seminars or get up on stage, you know, in January, I'll be at a conference with 4,500 people.
Wow.
That's fantastic, but still not enough. I have a goal of helping 1 million leaders reignite their soul.
I wanted to talk about that. I wanted to, because I thought when you and I first started getting to know each other a wee while ago, you came up and you said, Nick, this is my goal. This is why I've been put on this earth. And it started with 1 million. And I was already there. But now you've mentioned it. Share with us all your goal. Where are you at? Why? Why the goal? Because I love it. I think this is really aspirational as a human. And you talk about coaching what you and I do, but you also talk about the reach of people and the scale of business, and you and I beg to differ on that, and that's fine, that's a healthy debate. But just talk to me about the mission.
Yeah, you know, I had another, he may not have been a mentor, but he's a man that taught me a lot, probably 20 years ago, still in my fitness career. And, you know, we were sitting there after a long day and just having a chat, getting to know each other more on a personal level. And I admired his work ethic. I admired his drive. And I just wanted to just pick his brain. And one of the things that drove him, he said, you know, Stan, at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, are you a producer or are you a consumer? And that stuck with me. You know, I thought...
Say that again. Are you a producer?
Are you a producer or are you a consumer? So is the world a better place for having me in it? That's what it really comes down to at the end of the day. When we're in our younger years, we're not self-sufficient, right? We can't even feed ourselves, dress ourselves, clothe ourselves. And if we grew up in I grew up in a normal household, which means, you know, functional dysfunction, that kind of stuff, right? The normal, regular stuff.
Functional dysfunctional. Many of our listeners can agree to that.
My parents gave me a huge gift that I was able to really start my career on my own 2 feet. You know, with no real baggage or massive dysfunction of any kind. So when you kind of have that, you just have an advantage. And again, it just comes back to wanting to just help so many people. I've been extremely fortunate. And there's a lot of people who haven't been as such. And there's a lot of people who think the world is all about them. And, you know, I am not the center of anybody's universe. Maybe I'm half the center of my son's universe. And maybe the same goes for my dog. That's the one person who's always happy to see me when I come home.
That's why we have dogs, Stan. That's why we have dogs.
Right. But for me, it was very important to be a producer and to produce more value in the lives of others, because I wasn't born in war-torn country. Or I wasn't born with poverty. So there's nothing about what I've done to deserve being born in Canada when I was born. So I think that for that alone, plus seeing the fortune I've had over the years, it is important for me to give back to as many people as possible. And if anything in the book, if it's a habit, if it's a mindset, if it's systems of effectiveness or goal setting, if that helps even a few people make a little bit of a different choice about how they can show up in their life, worth it. I'll keep writing books.
Happy day. And please do, because it's great. It's a great gift you've got, putting that pen to paper. And when I read through it, it was, for me, being dyslexic, it was very easy for me to read the book. And yeah, it wasn't 5,000 words. It was 80-odd pages of real good stuff that I could take away and put into practice. But we'll certainly dig more into the book itself really soon. But What's your process to writing? You know, you talk about healthy habits, healthy routines, and I've just started going back to, we've got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and I've just started going back to spin class because that's about as far as I can go from exercise. I've gone from playing rugby, doing Ironman events, stuffing up my knee to suddenly, you know, hobbling up the road with the dog. But the routine is starting to come back, and I must admit, when I'm not moving and when I'm not exercising, I feel dreadful. But what is your process when you talk about your routine when it comes to writing specifically? Talk us through that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I try to write content, you know, throughout the years, whether it's, you know, an article on LinkedIn or, you know, any other sort of content. And my philosophy there is to give as much valuable content away for free as possible. I want to make sure that if I'm going to ask for a dollar ever, people feel like they've gotten thousands of dollars in free value first.
Beautiful.
Second thing is when I actually commit to writing a book, I actually go through two processes. One is a customer-centric process. I think that's important. Every business should really be around your customer. Don't just start and then find out, do we have anything here? Start a business around a customer, around a problem, solve it, and I think you've got a good business. And writing a book is no different. So the first question I ask myself is, who is this book for? The second question I ask myself is, what do I want this audience to do? It's an action. And I have to know who I'm writing it for and what I want them to do. This book is for anyone who's trying to make changes in their life, who understands that life isn't just about them. This could be people in a church. This could be people in a family, in a business, in a scholastic setting, in the military. It doesn't matter. Anyone that wants to see more success in their life, who's willing to put in the work, big caveat, this book is for them. So the work I want them to do is I want them to learn and, more importantly, implement 1, 2, 3, 10 tools to help arm them, as I put in the dedication, in their battle against complacency and an ordinary existence. Because, you know, we have one, I really believe we get one shot at life. I've been through, I mentioned 8 broken bones. You know, I've done some traveling, had a lot of great adventures, a great many misadventures with the friends that I grew up with. And life is just the best gift we're ever going to receive. So that's why I wrote the book, is for those leaders to take more action, to see better results. The third thing I ask is, what emotion do they need to experience in order to galvanize their commitment towards their action? And then finally, I get into content associated questions, because the fourth question I say is, well, how do I get them there? And so that might be a matter of, you know, how do I need to close? How do I need to open? That's really the bookends. I start with how I need to close first, and then I think about how do I need to open. In a book like this, it's very format-based. It's a page-a-day reader. Pick it up, read one page, put it down, read the whole book in an hour, read a section. So it really meets people where they're at. The first book was a story. I had like a movie, capture people's interest, write at the crux of the story, and then go back to the beginning. And then at the end, layer in the philosophies and systems that got me through that injury. And the second book was very academic. So with that process, every book is very distinct because it has a unique purpose for a unique audience, and it has a unique approach to help get them to the associated actions. Whether it is to see more success, embrace a different attitude, make more sales, lead with a different level of purpose and conviction, you name it.
You get up early, right? You write in the evening, when the kids have gone to bed, you write during the day when a thought comes in. How do you go about bringing the 80-odd pages to life? You know, you talk about the questions you ask yourself. And I've worked and I've sat in this global head office with a number of people very recently who have written books, and they've all got their own unique time. Some get up at 4 in the morning, some have to wait till very late at night to feel in the moment where they can write. others kind of walked down the street, and this guy from who has been writing some books on Afghanistan, he was walking down the street near us, and this thing came to him. He had to stop and get his pen and journal out and start writing because it was just there. But how do you do that? How do you bring those words into your world?
And what I like to do is exhaust what's called the executive function of the brain before the creative opens up. So when I get up early, I get up just after 5, and then I go and have my workout. I go through my daily routine. By the way, my daily routine is included in the book. And while we're talking about that, I think it's important that people look at the suggestions, because that's what they are. I am not self-absorbed enough to think that, Nick, this is what I do.
This is my way. You must do this. Right. And Nick, you must follow this routine.
I wouldn't be a very good coach. I wouldn't be a very good author. So it's not.
You wouldn't be on the podcast either, Stan, because it would be waste of everyone's time, my friend.
Well, you know, it's the way I like to think about this book, it's not prescriptive, it's suggestive.
Yeah.
So I suggest a set of tools, systems, frameworks, and I think it's up to the reader to try it first. Try it, make it a habit, and then incorporate it into the other learnings. Because, I mean, am I the only subject matter expert when it comes to behavior change and success? Of course not. Do I know it all when it comes to success? Of course not. I'm going to be learning until the day I die. I'm going to be making mistakes probably until the day I die, because success is usually the final step in a series of failures. So I'm not going to sit there and say I've got it all figured out. I've seen enough success and enough failure that I want to pass on my learnings. That's really what this book is. But going back to your question, I like to start with a workout, my morning routine, and then I like to have a few clients or, you know, definitely get through some of the higher priority items that my day requires of me. And then usually the best time to open up my brain for purposes of writing is when I get my second piece of physical activity in the day. That's when I hike my dog. So he's a nice big dog, pretty active. I like to take him for a hike. And we have an amazing network of trails, speaking of how beautiful our countries are. Great network of trails all through a community that's just a few minutes walk from my house. So it's invigorating. I can make it as intense as I want. I've got great skyline views of the city. I'm in the forest. And when that happens, I don't listen to music. I don't do anything like that. I just try to be present. Because what the neuro research is showing is if you've been really task oriented for a while, and then you go for a walk, that's actually when some of our best ideas happen. Einstein used to go for a 90-minute, 2-hour walk every day. But what actually happens is we ask the question, "How am I going to figure this out?" And we're really at that point in a very task oriented, linear form of thinking. Well, when we go for a walk and our conscious brain takes a rest, our subconscious mind is busy trying to backfill the synaptic connections. So there's new synaptic connections happening when you are hiking, gardening, you know, going for your workout, doing yoga, whatever it is. And that's why we might go to bed struggling with a problem and wake up with an answer. Or we might have a eureka moment when we're running. Even though we were asking ourselves the question for hours on end at our desk. So I think it's an important routine. Funny that comes up again.
Routine.
I mean, you want to be effective. You want to pound out content. You want to be, I don't care if you're a computer programmer. It's important you get away from your desk regularly, if not every day, because some of your most profound discoveries and insights, double entendre pun, are going to occur when we're not in task mode. And so that's where I do my thinking. And that usually gets me to the point where I get back to my desk. I've got a good idea for content and I just chip away until the book is at a stage where it's ready for editing.
You've probably given me a very good aha moment in explaining your process to writing your book. And thank you for sharing that with us all and also with myself. You know, I have the best job in the world, Stan. I get to have conversations with really cool people around the world like yourself. And I keep saying to Nicola regularly, I learn so much from my guests, from people like you. And she said, well, what, you know, why? I said, well, it's a great conversation. And it's why I share the content of what you and I discuss. But you've just given me that aha moment. I've got two particular clients that I work with, and in working with them, what I've experienced in themselves is they don't want to sit in a boardroom with me or the global head office with me and sit in a room. We'll go and walk. And it sounds really funny, but you talk about going for a walk sometimes gets your brain thinking and you can resolve situations or thoughts or ideas you've got. And they walk with me and we walk down the beach or we walk through a park or wherever it may be and we walk and we talk. And I'm one that will go and meet and be in that my client's presence in any state. And that's really important to my coaching business. But whilst they're walking, yes, we may not be talking, but I know that they're having such an enjoyable time of getting away from the constant noise of the emails pinging or the phones or the messages coming here and there. It gives them time just to think about themselves. And funny you mentioned that, one client recently who I walk with emailed me back saying, some of the walks we go on are the most beneficial to me as a person, and thank you for doing that. And we've walked out together holding an umbrella, and he's not 6 foot, but he's pretty tall, and I must laugh at myself as we walk down the street, but it works for him. And it's great to understand from your writing process about, I call it tiring the brain, getting the brain tired, and then your creative world takes on a different level. Is that come through trial and error? Is that how you wrote your first book, your second book, or has that kind of evolved over the years?
It's evolved over the years for sure. My first book, the best thing about my first book is how many mistakes I made. And that led to so much learning.
And we learn every day from our mistakes.
Absolutely, right? So when I say that, it was the fact that I had a very particular goal, because we actually mentioned the process, that there was two processes to go through. And we kind of talked about the customer-centric process. Mm. Second process is, why am I writing this book? What will this do for me, my business, my career, what have you? Hmm. And so if I know that, then it takes on a bit of a different traction because, am I writing this to position myself in a certain lane of expertise? Am I writing this book as a business development effort, whatever the case may be? Hmm. Early on, it was differentiation. Coaches are often a dime a dozen. So I really wanted to be looked at not as a business coach. That's a bad referral. Anyone that says you should meet my friend, he's a business coach, the person on the other end is not racing to go to a meeting with either of us.
No.
It's when you can really drill down and say, what is this person great at? Mm. This is Nick. He's one of the top career coaches in the world. He's going to be able to help you bring to the surface your amazing top skills. Mm. He's going to be able to turn your resume on its ear, and he's going to help you command more salary and get that job. That's a little bit of a better referral, right?
So I think so, yeah. Yeah.
And same thing for me. And so the first book was really written to help me differentiate from a sea of noise among other coaches and really backfill that, my focus areas were really on leadership, sales, strategy, and just the habits that form success. Because the big stipulate with this book is that what it takes to be a successful executive coach or a successful fitness professional or a successful athlete, father, husband, it's all the same. Mm. The fundamentals of success are really building blocks in a recipe or a formula. So it's just understanding what those building blocks are and then being intentional on implementing them in any and all areas of our life that we choose to be successful.
Hmm. The book's written. It's going to go out in a few weeks through Amazon. What do you want readers to take away from it? If you look at the kind of priorities to you, you put your heart and soul into pulling words together and making sense of things. But what do you want your readers to really take away from it and maybe message you and say, hey, Stan, obviously, thank you for putting your words out there, but what else is there?
Biggest thing I want people to do is I want them to read every page, not necessarily in order, but every page so they can decide what resonates, and then I want them to implement. So whether they have one new thing to implement because they're big on personal development and this book has met them decades into their journey, or whether they're just starting down the path of self-improvement And they might use this book as a, you know, absolute, you know, verbatim sort of formula. What I want people to do is implement. What I don't want people to do is read the book and say, that was nice, made sense.
Put it away.
I want them to implement. Whether they message me or not, whether they give credit or not, you know what? Read the book, implement everything, call the ideas yours. I don't do it for the credit. I do it to know that at least even to even think that I may have had an impact in other people's lives.
That's wonderful to hear. And I must admit, reading the book a few times, I said to you before we press record, I described it as a coffee kind of table, a bedside table book where you can just pick it up and put it down when there's things that are fizzing in your head that you want to kind of get a bit more thought on. And I spent a great time reading around mindset, habits and health. And those are the three kind of areas in all the chapters that really kind of stuck with me. And why it stuck with me, I think I wanted just to pick up and read from another angle of thoughts and ideas I could then, in your words, implement and start doing. And I think maybe in hindsight, it's your fault that I've gone back to spin class, Stan. It's your fault that I've picked up and said to Nicola, there could be another Ironman in me. It's your fault, Stan. So there's a great work. There you go. First recognition. You have made me implement things that I need to do because I love doing what I do. So that's my 5 pence worth from that side of things.
Excellent. Thank you.
We talk about contextualizing and visualizing things and books. And, you know, I described to you earlier about that man on the news widening out his arms and lifting that boulder off the poor child in the rubble. But how would you contextualize your book to our listeners so that they, you know, take action and get out and grab the book on Amazon? How would you contextualize your book to somebody who hasn't yet seen it?
And thank you. And so what the book really is broken up into key areas. I mentioned those building blocks. So I've identified what I feel those building blocks are. And it's not just me, by the way, because other books I'm writing, I'm interviewing some of the top leaders in the world. I've interviewed, you know, the founder of the world's number one tequila. I've interviewed one of the most successful athletic directors in history. I've interviewed a man that we know, one of the world's number one executive coach. These are some high, high level people, university professors. Those are the people that I'm learning from. So you and I both have the best job in the world because we get to deal with some of the coolest, most exciting, most successful people out there. And success leaves clues. We don't need to figure it out on our own. We can implement what the great, you know, giants in their industries have done. And we can fast track their success. So that's the other thing I want people to do with this book. I want them to see the same or more success that I've seen and faster. That's what I think good teachers do, is they help the next wave get there faster. But going back to it, really, the building blocks, we start with a clear and compelling vision and purpose. So people have to know why they're doing anything. You know, effort without perspective eventually fades. But if we can have a beacon, you know, something to drive us that compels us to go forth when we're tired, that's why the book starts where it does. And then we go into core values, because I think everybody has to know what they stand for, what they don't. Your core values are critical to know in order for you to go about your life making consistent ethical decisions. And if you're in leadership, that is an absolute pass or fail, because you cannot lead a team for long if you are not consistent with your moral compass. That's what your team needs to see from you and expect from you. After that, we move into, you know, daily habits and ways, methods of being more effective. We go on to goal setting, and then we go on all the way to, like you mentioned, health. I also section off relationships, and then we really tie it all together with a 10-step system. Implement in this order whatever you resonated with. And that is going to be a roadmap. Point number 10, by the way, is paying it forward.
I love that when you say pay it forward. And my view on that is just pass that on. You know,
exactly.
Give that to your closest friend, person you haven't spoken to, someone in your family, somebody at work, somebody you know that this book might be of service to or be of help to. Just pay it forward. And I think I'm glad you raised that point, because that was going to be a kind of a closing point to our conversation today. Is, you know, all well and good writing a book, all well and good reading a book, all well and good implementing things that you read in a book, But once that's done, don't let it collect dust. Just chuck it out there. You know, send it round. Send it round and let it free.
Absolutely. Going back to what we talked about earlier, I want people to consume this book, but then I want them to be a producer. Mm. Pay it forward, share the book, and through implementing the practices and fundamentals of the book, find ways of helping others. We all have something to give. Time, talent, you know, money, expertise, whatever it might be. You don't have to be one of the wealthiest people in your community to give back. You might actually be struggling yourself, but you might have time and you might have empathy. So you can, everyone can give back something where they are. Even if you've been really struggling going through the journey that you have, you've got perspective that you can share with others who also might be struggling.
Very well said. We spoke a great deal on the podcast today, and especially in the book, Success is a System. And I mentioned it in my introduction that success looks very different to so many different people around the world. To some, it could be as simple as getting out of bed in the morning, getting dressed, starting the day with some healthy food. To others, it could be landing a promotion, a pay rise, a new job. Others, it could be, and we've got a saying in New Zealand, and all countries around the world have their very unique sayings, but we've got a funny saying here, the three B's. The boat, the batch, the BMW, about the kind of, I need this, I must get this next big shiny thing. And it does make me laugh every time I hear it, because I think you need to get under the skin of that to understand what's driving. But to me personally, you know, success is knowing that I'm serving my purpose every day, my core purpose I spent 8-9 months working on. Since writing your book, has the meaning of success changed in your eyes or not?
No, it hasn't. And I would say that I was clear on my purpose, which is why the definition of success has been consistent. Mm. For me, success is a family that loves me. And to achieve that, there has to be presence. You know, I can't go, daddy's working, I'll get to you after I'm done this book or this client. Mm. So family is first. And after that, it is work that invigorates me, that helps others. You mentioned it earlier, I'm extremely passionate about what I do. I'm very fortunate that something I love so much teaches me a great deal, and it helps others, and it pays the bills. When you have all those things happening at once, that to me is great success. And the third piece is always finding a way to give back. My team and I, we spend a day picking up garbage on Earth Day. You know, in various capacities, we volunteer, we send funds to lots of great causes through our events over the course of the year. So for me, again, family, invigorating work that helps others, and finding ways to give back. Mm. To me, that's success. Broaden the family and say friends as well. I definitely can't go too long without enriching my soul by spending time with the great people mm. that I'm fortunate to call friends.
I don't want to ruin the story of the book and your great work, but there is a part that made me kind of chuckle about getting Madonna to do my taxes. But there was also a more important point, and this is something that's really grappling with many people around the world today, I know, but you know, in your book you talked about living in the time and that instant gratification that comes with today's day and age, keeping up with the Joneses or the Kardashians, whatever, you know, receiving, I think you said 4,000-10,000 marketing impressions a day alone in North America, all designed for just feeding that machine. Have you got any kind of tips or any thoughts around quieting that daily onslaught that our listeners can take away from the book and your kind of research on that?
The title. One of them is... called success. Defined as score. Before we try to keep... keep up with the Kardashians before we go get up and live without. And for most people, when they really stop and think about their definition of happiness, it's disconnected from where we spend most of our time and what we spend most of our money on. And it's a big surprise, big shocker, that you're not necessarily happier in that bigger house after a few days or a few weeks. Sure, it's nice, but it's just more house to clean. Hmm. If people really started with their purpose and their values, and what really, really, really matters to them, they would have a way different scoreboard for success, and they would get caught up less in, you know what, Nick, you should buy those jeans. I guarantee if you buy those jeans and drink that beer, women will be throwing themselves at you. You know, it's just 4,000 to 10,000 messages a day, some of which actually online have algorithms on how to become more addictive and get us to spend more time consuming their content online.
Wow.
If you're not conscious of it, it's pretty easy to get sucked into scrolling social media and not really being alive through your day, just kind of walking through the paces. So by thinking about what's truly important to us, we're going to spend more time in those relationships and working towards the objectives that we know fill us up from the inside. Don't just give us a temporary high, and don't just feed the corporate machine you talked about.
Mm. I think that's a really good point around that. And you know, we're just surrounded by technology that allows us to do a wonderful job. Look, my podcasts are meant to be long form. You know, we've been going an hour and five. And I know that people that are still listening in when we go live on this podcast truly want to kind of benefit themselves and better themselves. So that's why I don't do short 2-minute, 3-minute podcasts. I just find them personally quite boring to myself as getting someone like yourself on to have a chat. So on that note, we've been going for over an hour. I've learnt again with you and as a guest and a little bit more about yourself and the story and the why and the book and, you know, the wonderful gift that you're sharing with so many people and that million goal. I can't wait to see how that kind of evolves over the next few years with yourself and knocking that one off, as they say here in New Zealand. How can listeners around the world go about getting in contact with you from a connection point of view, from a social media, if that's such a word anymore? But you know, we don't want to put algorithms in there, and we don't want to start people getting bombarded with 10,001 marketing campaigns. But you know, you've got a great story, you're doing some wonderful things, and others may want to carry on, you know, speaking with you and understanding a bit more. How can they go about finding out more about you?
Thank you for asking. And you know, the best places where I'm probably most active would be LinkedIn and Facebook. LinkedIn, I'm more active on a content basis, and it's just Stan Peake, P-E-A-K-E. Facebook, if they follow Insight, I-N-S-I-T-E, performance coaching, that's where our mandate is, like I said, give as much free value as possible. We don't have anything that people can buy on either of our social media channels. It is just, here's some daily inspiration, you know, facts, perspective, all those kinds of things. And you know what? I'm always happy. I reply to all my emails personally. If people want to email stan@insightperformancecoaching.com, I'm pretty active on my email, making sure that I'm responsive even when I go away. I mean, the great thing about what you and I do is we can do it anywhere in the world. So even when I'm traveling, I make sure I get back to anyone that may have a question, ideas. Again, you and I are both learning until the day we decide to hang up the towel. But it's been a great ride so far. And I'm just, like you said, I'm here to help the next several 100,000 people until I hit that million mark.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. Well, look, I've really enjoyed the chat today, Stan. Thank you for coming on and being a guest. Thank you for being so open and true, as I knew you would be in knowing you for some time. And I will make a point, because your book's going to be put out on Amazon. I'll let our listeners know when that's going to get released and how he or she can go about buying the book. I'll put links up on my show notes on how they can make contact with you as well. So that's really it, team. I wanted to say thank you all so much once again for joining me, taking the time to listening. Congratulations to Stan on producing a wonderful book and sharing that knowledge and wisdom. To my small, growing little family around the world, feel free to share this around to anyone you think that may be of use or it may sit well with, mates, friends, work colleagues, whatever. Till next time, Stan and I are going to carry on talking, but I'm going to stop and press stop in a second. But till next time, I look forward to seeing you all and sharing some more insight with you on the Nick Crowd podcast. Take care. Go well.